You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, and we are behind, but we're getting caught back up. By the time you hear this, we might be fully caught back up. And listen, man, John's spread pretty thin these days, but listen, I'm coming back, baby. I'm coming back. We're getting stuff put together. I am back after an absence, and it is me and more.
Woo!
What's happening? How are you doing in the year so far? What's going on? And what's happening? What's going on?
So much is going on. There's going to be some really, really cool things happening soon. But until then, it's like wind chill minus 30 here, which is crazy. And it's going to be like minus 40 overnight. So it's nuts. You got to stay warm. I have cat socks. That's exciting.
Well, nice. cat socks is where it's at, people. Let's hit some news stories. We're going to hit some. Well, actually, here's one of the bigger stories is the Rock Hall of Fame. It's back again like it is every year. And the nominations for Rock Hall 2022 have been announced. They are, I want to soak up the sun, Sheryl Crow, Cyndi Lauper, Warren Zevon, Willie Nelson, Kate Bush, Rage Against the Machine, The White Stripes, Missy Elliott, Soundgarden, The Tribe Called Quest, Iron Maiden, George Michael, The Spinners, and Joy Division and New Order nominated as one band, even though that's something that hasn't ever really been discussed. And in Peter Hook's autobiography, his 800 excellent autobiography, Substance Inside New Order, he goes on at length about how Joy Division and New Order are two separate bands. Interestingly, usually the Rock Hall in the past 4 or 5 years has taken a lot of hits because, you know, they've introduced people like Jay-Z or Bon Jovi over bands like Kraftwerk or whoever. And this year, I think they got less criticism with those issues because there are a lot of pretty solid rock acts here. And it is a rock-heavy list, and it frankly is a more rock-heavy list than usual. And also, there's a lot of, I guess, maybe what you would call critic darlings here as opposed to, you know, terrible bands like Bon Jovi, who is terrible and just bad and is in the Rock Hall, and while Kraftwerk is not, it's a disgrace. Also, one other thing is, I meant to do a story about this, but I haven't yet because I'm lazy while Emor runs the ships and keeps things together. The Rock Hall of Fame defined rock music. Emor, do you see that?
They defined rock music.
Yes, the Rock Hall of Fame defined what they mean by rock music, and here's what rock music is defined as by the Rock Hall.
Okay.
And it is the following. Here's what it is. Well, I pull it on up, and I'm going to read it to you. And here is the Rock Hall.
Rock Hall.
Definition of rock and roll. Born from the collision of rhythm and blues, country and gospel, rock and roll is a spirit that is inclusive and ever-changing. The Rock Hall of Fame celebrates the sound of youth culture and honors the artists whose music connects us all. Let's see here.
Is that just a statement, like, for what the Rock Hall is?
Yeah. Their definition, damn, I'm trying to see if I can find out the full, here it is, maybe.
Okay.
Let's see here. Oh, here we go. Rock and roll is not defined by any one genre, but rather a sound that moves youth culture, which I think is a stupid thing. So they're saying that rock isn't a genre, which, like, that's dumb, because rock and roll, in any record store, in any radio station, and even in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, rock is assigned as a genre. And I don't care that the Rock Hall of Fame wants to introduce acts that aren't rock, which is fine, because the fact of the matter is rock and roll pretty much ceased to be a barometer of youth culture and cultural advancement, or not cultural advancement, youth culture or cultural expression in the, I don't know, late 90s, early 2000s. Like, it's tough to pick a new rock band now that represents a massive shift in culture. Now, of course, you could point out, like, punk bands, and some alt bands, you know, bands like Amon and the Sniffers, or bands like those kinds of bands that represent maybe a segment of youth expression. But the fact of the matter is pop and hip hop, those are the genres right now that represent the widest, I guess, expression of youth culture, at least in North America. So So I'm fine if the Rock Hall wants to introduce bands that aren't rock, but I just think they're doing this weird dance where instead of saying, you know, we're the Rock Hall, but we want to also introduce, you know, hip-hop. I mean, that's what it is, really. We're the Rock Hall, but we want to introduce hip-hop. So instead of just saying, all right, we're the Pop Music Hall of Fame or the Modern Music Hall of Fame, we're just going to change the definition of rock, which I hate. I hate. And this is, I mean, this thing is, this is the beginning of time, but so many acts, or not so many acts, so many people love to change the definition of things. I remember when violence was expanded to mean non-physical things. When no, violence means physical injury, and there are other words for non-physical things, but like violence means physical, and people like try to expand the word violence to mean like verbal assault, which I don't agree with. The point being is they're doing this weird thing where instead of just saying we're A and B, they're like, well, we just want to keep calling ourselves the exact same thing, so we're going to try to change a word that has a not concrete meaning, because rock and roll doesn't have a concrete meaning, but we're just going to give the meaning no meaning whatsoever. Just say it means music. I mean, here's the thing. And then I'll let Emma respond to the acts being admitted and her perspective of rock, the word rock being expanded. In law, when we read a statute or a lot of things, is if a word is expanded so that it means anything, then you're reading the statute incorrectly, because then there's no purpose of using that word. So if rock music means any kind of music, then the word rock music has no meaning at all, and it's a dominant interpretation. Like I said, if they want to make it pop music or the music or the modern music or the rock and hip-hop or the rock funk, fine. That's fine with me. I just think, and I raised the Picayune point, but they're just doing this stupid thing where instead of acknowledging that they want to expand beyond just rock or whatever, they're trying to change the word, the meaning of rock and roll, which is dumb. I mean, I don't know if you can define rock and roll, but I think I would generally say guitar music, that guitar music, like the Rock
Hall. What about synths?
Well, I would say it's not rock. We'll give me an example.
Well, like they still use guitars, I guess.
I mean, I guess Kraftwerk, like you said, Gary Newman does use guitar. Kraftwerk doesn't really use guitar, but maybe Kraftwerk isn't rock, and that's fine with me. I mean, Kraftwerk is kraut. Well, it's kraut rock. Well, Kraftwerk used to use guitars, and then they didn't. I mean, you could make the argument that Kraftwerk is synth pop and not rock, or avant garde. I mean, really, it's avant garde synth. So maybe that doesn't bother me. Maybe Kraftwerk isn't rock, and they don't have to be. I don't know. And more, what's your perspective of the new definition of rock and roll as per the Rock Hall, and what's your perspective of people being admitted? And out of the 1, 2, 3, and what's your perspective of Joy Division, New Order as one band? And what's your pick for the 5 or 6 acts that are going to get in?
Okay, so wait, 5 get in?
We'll say 6. I forget exactly how many it is, but
okay.
I'll give you 6.
I'll do that at the end. So it does sound like they're being more like rock and roll. It's not a tangible thing. It's more of like the spirit of rock and roll. Like,
but then, and I, you're not making this argument. I'm making this argument. then what's like swing music? Because swing music was rebellion. So is that rock and roll? So if swing music is rebellious, if swing music is rock and roll, then all music is rock and roll, which means the word rock and roll has no meaning ever. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Em. I'll shut up and let you talk.
But like, don't they have swing artists like in there? Like they have artists from all sorts of things, right? Like they have like blues and jazz, which are integral to rock and roll. They have R&B, which is also integral to rock and roll. And then like all the hip hop and rap acts too. Like they have that spirit, and they also used a lot of rock and roll samples too. So it's like, exactly, like, where do you draw the line? There's so much kind of, it's not clear cut, but like country music is clear cut, right? Like in the Country Hall of Fame, you're not going to find like Black Sabbath, right? Like they're not going to be, there's no, the Country Hall of Fame has like Dolly Parton, and like that's kind of it, right? Like it's a very clear cut kind of genre. But I think rock's more like the Blob, you know, like it's going, and it just like envelops different things and like takes different things with it. Like just now, like talking about like what craft work is, like there's so many things you can use to describe them, right? And isn't it easier just to call them a rock band? Not saying that's necessarily right, but just saying like it's just more of an umbrella term more than anything, it's it feels like now. So maybe it is more of just the spirit of stuff. The Joy Division New Order thing bothers me. I don't like it. They are two separate bands. They are two separate entities, and they should be treated like that. But did you see the Peter Hook interview that came out today? And he was like, oh, I hope that this would be like a, or might be an olive branch to reconnect the band, and then we can all move forward that way.
I did see that. I think the reason they're combining Joy Division and New Order is because famously the Rock Hall is terrible admitting actually good bands and putting Bon Jovi in instead of Kraftwerk. I think the reason they're doing that is they're kind of shoehorning their bets, and that they're like, oh, we probably should have Joy Division in because it looks bad not to. So let's combine Joy Division and New Order to get more votes. You know what I mean? But I mean, they're two different bands. I mean, there's no question about that. Peter Hook's the man. I don't know if maybe he really does care about reconnecting. But the bad blood between that whole crew is so bad. You know what I mean? I guess he's being classy. Better he does that than he's like, F those guys. I even hate them. Let me put it this way: he's being classy. I don't know if he's being totally genuine. I don't know. Maybe if Bernard Sumner said, Peter, let's be pals again, maybe Peter would be like, okay. But I feel the bad blood runs deeper than that between both of them. And so I feel he's trying to maybe come across as the bigger guy, but there definitely still is anger there. I mean, because if you read the excellent Inside New Order book by Peter Hook, the bad blood is pretty deep between both of them, you know? And Peter does kind of be like, maybe someday we'll be friends. There are a few things more enraging than when someone, and I think they both kind of were kind of jerky, and I don't think either of them was a saint, but there are a few things more frustrating when someone is a jerk and they're like, Build us something does multiple incredibly mean things to Steve. And Bill's like, I don't know why Steve's angry. I got nothing against him. It's like, because you're just a huge dick to him. That being said, I feel as though it's kind of a slightly passive-aggressive power play. But that being said, if Barney Miller called up Peter Hook and was like, let's be pals again, then maybe he would say, okay, let's be pals. Because if you recall him, a few years ago, the whole thing did get settled. Remember, they settle like everything like a couple of years ago?
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, but I think they were taking pot shots again at each other. So, anyways,
I'm not. Yeah, maybe.
So anyway, I think they're shoehorning their bets. If I had to pick six acts that should, here's the six acts that should get in, and here's the six acts that will get in. Bands that should get in: Joy Division, New Order for sure. One.
Yeah.
Warren Zevon, two. Willie Nelson, three. Kate Bush, four. I'm already running out. Cyndi Lauper, five. Do I want Missy Elliott or the Spinners? I'll just say, or Tribe. I'll say the Spinners before Tribe and Missy, just because they are a very iconic. Well, actually, you know what though? Spinners are very cool, but I don't know if they're groundbreaking. So I'll give it to Missy Elliott. As to who should get in. So my six that should get in are Missy, Joy Division, Cyndi Lauper, Warren Zevon, Willie Nelson, and Kate Bush. And honestly, Rage should get in, but I only have six, and I think they should get in before Rage just because they're older. The six bands that will get in are White Stripes, which honestly, I'm not anti-White Stripes, and there's certainly worse picks than White Stripes. So White Stripes, one. Missy Elliott, two. Joy Division, three. Willie Nelson, four. I'm surprised that Willie Nelson isn't in already, honestly.
I thought he was.
Rage, five. And George Michael, six. And I'm surprised that Maiden's not in. Like, I remember Judas Priest really didn't get in. But they kind of gave them, like, that, you know, veteran award or whatever. I'm surprised that Maven isn't in because they are bigger than Judas Priest at this point. At any rate, so the six that I think will get are White Stripes, Missy Elliott, Joy Division, Willie Nelson, George Michael, and who's my other one? Probably Rage, I think I said. So those are the six that I think will get him. That being said, I got to say, Emor, for the past four, I mean, I don't care about the Rock Hall that much, but I just find it frustrating that sometimes some bands that I like a lot do want to get in, they just can't get in. But that being said, this list right here, I say pretty much no matter how you spin it, aside from like George Michael, and maybe Sheryl Crow. Like, everyone here is pretty deserving to get in, I would say. And even Sheryl Crow and maybe George Michael, just because they are massive, massive stars, or were, because George Michael is dead. But I think this, as far as respectable lists, no matter how you split, this list is more respectable than ones in the past, for sure.
Yeah, it's a better mix, for sure. I am kind of like, I'm just thinking like, what in the future, what bands are they going to try to bundle? You know, if they do like Joy Division, New Order, and I know like they're just like, oh, well, they have a lot of the same members, but like that's not really a reason.
Right.
Because how many people have been inducted like multiple times with different bands? Like Dave Grohl.
I had the same thought, like Clapton's been in like four different bands. You know what I mean? It's like four.
And he was inducted solo too, I think, or something
Well, there's Clapton, Derek and the Dominoes, Cream, and maybe one other band. I don't, you know what I mean? Yardbirds, probably. So yeah. So anyway, I gotta say, at least they're doing better, Em. At least they're doing better.
Yeah, it's an improvement.
Zorn, one of my favorite newish bands, is releasing their debut LP. They've released a whole bunch of singles. Well, not a whole bunch, like three or four singles before. And finally, their debut LP is coming out. It's called... Oh, actually, I don't think they announced the title yet. I think it might just be called Zorn. It's going to be out on Sorry State. And the lead single, The Spell of the Fairy Tree, which could be a cheesy power metal song or a totally awesome black and death punk song. And luckily, it's a very cool black and death punk song. I've been waiting for a Zorn album for about 3 or 4 years. I'm very psyched about it. The lead single sounds exactly like Zorn sounds, and I think it's real cool. I'm definitely psyched that Zorn's putting out an album because they put out a bunch of EPs. And sometimes when like kind of Buzzy or It bands put out an album following EPs, it sounds like just a bunch of the singles from the EP, from the EPs or singles. But I definitely do think that Zorn, even their Zorn's EPs even, kind of have a flow, an ebb and a tide. And so I think they've got the mountains and valleys to be able to make a full-fledged album, and not just a collection of songs. So I'm totally psyched. Do you know about Zorn? And do you know the thing on stage about how the lead singer gets carried out in a coffin and jumps out with some whips and starts whipping the audience and stuff? And it's pretty wild.
I know about them because, like, you've talked about them on the podcast before. And I think, did we talk about a song by them before, or did I just check them
out?
Probably,
I don't remember.
But anyway, yeah, like the story that you said about, like, he shows up and then, like, lights a sword on fire and just, like, starts waving it around and then go on Bandcamp to listen to the song. And that's her profile, like, picture on it. And it's perfect. He's just, like, it's just a massive flaming sword. So that was really, really funny. But really, really cool. So I haven't listened to a lot of them, but I listened to The Spell of the Fairy Tree, and it's really cool. It's just great. There's the best, like death metal meets punk is like just pure chaos, and like that's what it is.
Yeah,
and it's just I'm excited to hear more from them, and I'm gonna go back and listen to the EPs.
Okay, well, they have another exciting band, is a band that M Moore is a big fan of, and I'm a big fan of. Gel. M Moore, tell us about Gel.
Yeah, so Gel have they're in the same boat as Zorn. They just announced their debut at Full Lengths. So up to this point, they've had a promo tape, Violent Closure, their EP, which was amazing, a live EP, which is also really good, and they released their split with Cold Brats last year, and that is awesome. So their new album is going to be called Only Constant, and it's coming out on March 31st on Convulse Records. So they've released a video for their lead single, Attainable. So the video is really cool because it's like black and white and it's live shot. So live shot footage, sorry, that's like shot in black and white. And it was filmed at the Subterranean in Chicago, like, or in January. And it, like, the shows always look so like fun and just so good. Like, I was watching like the Hate 5-6 video from last year, one of them, and the whole band, like, they're so into it. They're playing, just destroying. Like, the lead singer Sammy, they're right in with the crowd and just going, and it is amazing. Like, there are a band that's like, I know that they're I think they're playing Toronto soonish, and I want to go see them because they're absolutely phenomenal. But the song itself is just like, it just rips. Like, again, Sammy's voice is amazing. Like, what they're able to do to sound like that, just absolutely just ferocious, just like rage incarnate, is awesome. So it's great hardcore. I'm really looking forward to the album being out so I can talk about it.
Oh, have you heard it?
I can either confirm nor deny.
Fair enough. Should people be excited at more?
Yes.
Gel is an awesome band. This sounds cool, and I definitely think they've got, see, the problem, as I just mentioned with Zorn, the problem with hardcore bands, especially buzzy hardcore bands, is sometimes when they put an album, it's like, here's 10 songs that are just 10 songs. But I definitely think Gel should be able to put out a full an albumy album, which I definitely prefer. I don't know why sometimes hardcore, I guess it happens a lot of punk, buzzy punk bands, but why sometimes hardcore bands, like I guess they get nervous or whatever, or they just put out 10 songs or 8 songs or 12 songs without doing a full album. I don't know why that happens. It really isn't that difficult, I think. I mean, it's difficult to write great songs for sure. But if you're able to write great songs, I don't think it's that hard to make an album. I don't know why hardcore bands particularly, but I guess a lot of punk bands have problems putting out and like making a full, concrete, cohesive statement as opposed to just a bunch of singles. But I think they can do it. So let's listen to Gel right now. This is Gel doing Attainable, and we'll be right back. And we are back. And more. Ozzy.
Yes.
He had to cancel his European tour, which was, I think, supposed to be his farewell tour. And I think it was basically his maybe 27th or 28th farewell tour. The first being the No More Tours from like 95 or 96. Basically, I think he said it's his back problem, like a back problem or something. But they also said that it's not that he's not going to play live anymore. It's that he's not going to tour anymore, which I believe. Yeah. On one hand, I feel bad for Ozzy, but on the other hand, I don't feel bad for Ozzy at all. Listen, I'm sorry to hear guys having health problems. That's sad, but I mean, Ozzy he's handled the second half of his career financially extremely well, and he's made millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. Legacy-wise, he's totally spent the last 30 years destroying the legacy of the first 30 years. I mean, he really is just like totally ruined what Black Sabbath is or was, or not that they ruined what Black Sabbath is, but it's like in the 90s, before you know Ozzy became a total joke, he was like Ozzy of Black Sabbath, you know, the Iceman, and now he's just like this comical guy that just rips people off left and right, that has, I mean, I don't know how many final tours you've done to rip people, you know, to rip people. He's done so many final tours that when he says final tour, no one even believes it anymore.
Yeah,
but also I think the biggest disgrace was that he sued Tony Iommi when Tony Iommi had cancer for the trademark rights to Black Sabbath. And my favorite part of that complaint was all four members of Black Sabbath were equally responsible for the popularity of Black Sabbath, not just Tony Iommi. Therefore, Ozzy should have half. Not a quarter, half, you know. And Tony Iommi ended up settling. I don't know what the settlement was. I think it was private. And I mean, that's just a real dirtbag move. People say, well, you know, it's Sharon that did it, and I gotta say, Sharon isn't a nice person. She's a dirtbag. But that being said, she couldn't do any of that stuff unless it had Ozzy's okay. Ozzy could have said, no, Sharon, Tony's my friend. I don't want you to sue him while he has cancer. You know, that could kill him. And so, I don't think Sharon's a nice person. I think Sharon's a pretty rotten person. But the blame is at least most, if not all, on Ozzy, because Sharon couldn't do anything without Ozzy's okay. And so from Sharon's perspective, you can make the argument, well, she's Ozzy's manager, so she's just trying to get what's best for Ozzy, which is that's legally your job. So then the blame is all on Ozzy. So I just think, you know, Ozzy was a great singer, not now. And also there's the whole thing where I don't know if he's ever written any lyrics ever. On the first two Ozzy albums, he and Sharon deleted Bob Daisley and the other drummer. And then they re-record the album, and there was so much uproar that they had to go back and rebuy the rights to get them back on the record because they tried to. You don't know about that, man?
So they
re-released. So, you know, Ozzy's solo, his first guitar player was Randy Rhoads.
Yeah.
The album, the first two albums were mostly written by Bob Daisley and another guy. And when they re-released the records in the 90s, Sharon and Ozzy deleted Bob Daisley and the bass player, or the drummer, rather, and had them re-recorded by two studio musician scabs, you know. That way they wouldn't have to pay any royalties to Bob Daisley. So if you buy the 90s reissues of the first two Ozzy albums, they sound terrible because they're like literally weekend re-recordings of the entire album. They were so bad that they actually had to go back and re-record them. And they didn't tell the fans or anything. So it's just a rip-off. I mean, Ozzy really has been ripping off the fans for years and years and years. And he's been pulling all these final tours. And I don't know if it's going to be my last tour or not. You know, and it never is. And yet again, people are like, oh, poor Ozzy. I feel sorry the guy has got health problems. But, he's been and what annoyed me again is, of course, they cut Bill Ward out of the last Black Sabbath reunion album. Yeah. And at the time, Ozzy and Sharon were like, well, Bill's health is not good. And he can't tour. You know, hey, we're worried about Bill's health because his health isn't there. And this is a Black Sabbath album. And then literally like 3 or 4 months ago, Ozzy's like, well, actually, it wasn't really a Black Sabbath album without Bill Ward. I wish Bill could have been there. It's like, you cut him out. You know, so I'm just very annoyed. I'm beyond annoyed, Ozzy, at this point. And he's just been a real dirtbag, honestly. But the counter argument is, word on the street, despite all that, all four of the original Black Sabbath guys are still friends to a degree. So if they're still friends, then should I hold the grudge on their behalf? That being said, Ozzy's not going to get my money. I did see the Black Sabbath reunion in 2009 or 2008, and it was awesome. As opposed to Halford, who, you know, his legacy's taken some hits, but Halford is still Halford. Ozzy's just a total joke. And so, I don't know, man. I just think my care about Ozzy, his career, I just don't care because he's been such a dirtbag and a joke for the past 30 years. I don't really care that he's canceling his shows. But he doesn't care either because look how much money he's wrangled out of the whole thing. And also, I got to say is, and then I'll stop talking, is I actually don't think he wants a tour. I think Sharon makes him tour. I think Sharon will tour him until he drops dead. But then again, he's the one in the driver's seat. He can say, I'm not going to tour, but he doesn't have the cards to say that. I don't think he's wanted to tour since the 90s, but I think Sharon makes him tour. Now, if he had any guts, he'd say, I'm not going to tour. So it falls back on him again. So I just don't care. The legacy of Ozzy is long since worthless, and I don't really care. What's your perspective? That's my critical beatdown of poor Ozzy.
Pick him while he's down. Yeah.
Yeah, I am.
I didn't know the thing about the re-recording of the stuff, like the first two solo albums. Like, that's a really shitty thing to do. But yeah, like when I first read this, it was kind of like, okay, that's good that he's pulling the plug and not touring until something really, really bad happens. You know, like that was my first thought. Like, yeah, he's been through a lot of stuff like in his life health-wise, and especially in the last couple years. So, like, just to put him through a tour where he has to do extensive travel, has to be on stage every night, has to try to move around on stage, like, with a back issue, like, that's just seems very cruel and bad for everyone involved. Like, people who bought tickets would feel bad, like, seeing him like that, you know what I mean, too. So it's good that that's done and like that's how it is. I don't think that Cher makes him tour. I think he wants to tour because that's been his life for like ever, right? Like, he wanted to make it as a singer, he wanted to make it with Black Sabbath, and they did, and they worked really hard and like all this kind of stuff. So I think the touring is kind of like embedded in him. And I remember watching something, and I don't remember if it was on like one of the shows or what it was on, or if it was just like an interview, but he had to back out of a tour date, and he was like shaking because he felt so bad. So it's like, is it because that's something that you need to like move on, like you're like that's part of your life, your lifeblood, you're kind of like addicted to playing live almost, or you're so used to it, like that's what you do. So that, like, that's what I think. He's definitely gonna perform live again, like 100%, like just not touring, just local places. I think people would still travel to see him because, you know, like Ozzy Osbourne. But at the same time, I think if he wants to just call it, he's more than earned just calling it and just being like, yep, this is it. I'm not going to play live anymore. There is another Osbournes in the works, like the reality show. Mm-hmm. They're rebooting the Osbournes, like their first one. They're rebooting it. So it's going to have everyone in it. But again, I think that's something that Sharon's 100% behind, because again, I was reading something on Loudwire where Ozzy was like, yeah, I don't know about the show. Because the first season or the first couple seasons really took a toll on everybody. So I don't want to bring that back into everything. But again, who knows what the truth is and where everything really lies. But yeah, I think it's time. I think it's good that, again, he was able to call it and didn't like collapse on stage one day.
And it sounds like you're more sympathetic to Ozzy than I am. Are you more sympathetic to Ozzy? Do you have the massive annoyance and frustration towards Ozzy that I have?
I don't think so. I think I'm more sympathetic because it's like he's something I've kind of, or someone I've kind of grown up with, like growing up with Black Sabbath and growing up with like his solo stuff and on the radio and, you know, associating that stuff with like good times with like my family and just, you know, like it's more, the music is like enmeshed with like memories and stuff. So yeah, I think that's kind of, I have a more like emotional attachment, but that's not the right term. I don't know. It's just, it's something that's always been there. Yes.
Well, there you have it. John trying to tear down M. Moore's pleasurable memories of Ozzy. Well, listen, I will cease to attacking what do they call it? The Prince of Darkness. Prince of Darkness with the Daisy Dobson. Just a couple more quick stories. Parrish Mayhew, ex Cro-Mags. Is releasing an album for Aggros, which of course is kind of like a morphing of the word Cro-Mags. Aggros, the album Aggros follows a single that Parrish released. It was like 7 minutes long. The album is called Rise of Aggros. It's out March 1, and it's all instrumental. M. Moore, following the 7 minute long Aggros instrumental single. Do you have a desire to hear 35 to 40 minutes of? I'll kick it off. Parrish is an amazing guitar player, and certainly he's one of the architects of the NYHC sound. I think Harley and Parrish probably are about 50-50 in literally creating the NYHC sound. And I definitely think those two created it for sure. You know, Parrish says, Harley didn't do anything. I did everything. And Harley says, Parrish didn't do anything. I did everything. I think it's 50-50, particularly if you look at the material they've both put out. Harley's, you know, recent solo stuff is really, really good. Parrish's instrumental stuff, it sounds really good, but it's 7 minutes long. And it's just the same riff over and over and over. And there's really no composition, something that Harley's really good at. So, you know, it goes back. You know, it probably would be better if they could just get along. That's probably not going to happen. Paris's music sounds awesome. Like, I love the way it sounds. I love the riffs, but there's no composition there. And so I just don't really care. It's like the Cro-Mags made an awesome pie and Paris was like, here's some really good crust, John. This crust is really good. I'm like, yeah, crust is good, but I'm not going to eat a slice of crust. You know what I mean?
Not just layers?
Right. I'll listen to a slice of crust punk, but just a slice of crust. I get bored. M. Moore, are you excited for this? Do you agree that this is kind of I think most artists would just get some singer and honestly, it wouldn't be that good. I think Paris does sing actually here and there, but I think most artists would just get some singer that we'd never heard of. And everyone would be like, the music's good. I mean, the music's good, but the singer's okay. Whereas he's just skipping that step and it's all instrumental. Is that the wise move? And do you want to listen to 7 minutes of instrumental hardcore? Cause I kind of don't honestly, but I don't like instrumental music in general. The only instrumental music I really like is some Frank Zappa and maybe some classical and stuff. But, like, do you like instrumental? Would you want to hear this? Or should you have gotten a singer or maybe even gotten a singer that some people know and do, like, a supergroup type thing?
I think, I don't really like just instrumental music. It really has to be exciting. Like, there has to be a lot of shit happening to make it like listenable. Like, there's a lot of really cool like just instrumental music out there that is really cool and really, really exciting. This is not that. Again, he is very talented musician. That's awesome. That's great. 7 minutes is way too long. I can see you using it as like background music or kind of like trance music, where it's just like, okay, this is just on to kind of like relax and get me out of my head kind of thing. I could see that 100%. I don't think I'll be listening to the album. It would be cool if he got another singer and made like a super group kind of situation. Like, that would have been really interesting and pretty cool. But then it's kind of like, well, why didn't he? Did he just want to showcase like kind of technical ability and like, look at me shred?
Do you think it's like some, what's the word I'm looking for? Vanity? And that like, he's like, no, I don't want anybody to sing over top my awesome riffs. Like, people need to hear my riffs, you know, unadulterated with vocals.
The guitar sings. Yeah. It could easily be that. Like, there's a lot of, yeah, I could see that. I think it's, there's a healthy sprinkle.
I think it's
ego.
That, honestly.
Yeah.
But it is tough. Like, if he just gets, like sometimes, like, in a situation, somebody will get, like, a different singer for every track. The problem is, like, those albums never are good because it's, like, it's too jolting. You know what I mean? And so he could get someone that, like, no one's ever heard of. And, I mean, if it's really, really awesome, then it's awesome. But that's really tough to do. I think what he should have got maybe was get like a singer that is good that people know or somewhat know. Yeah. But on the other hand, that does take away from him. And for whatever reason, people do tend to focus on the singer. So if he brought in the singer of Agnostic Front, Roger Meerut or whatever, then people be like, oh, it's Roger Meerut's thing, not Paris's thing. So he's in kind of a tough spot. But that being said, I'm sorry. I'm just not going to listen to multiple 7-minute instrumental hardcore tracks.
But Slash did that. Like, Slash did that really, really well with, like, Miles Kennedy.
Really? You like Miles Kennedy?
Yeah, I like the Slash and Miles Kennedy stuff. I haven't listened to Alter Bridge very much.
Have you ever seen them live?
No.
I should know what AC/DC was.
Are they good?
No.
<know.
laughs> people like them, you know.
Was this Slash or was this Alter Bridge?
It was Slash's Snake Pit with Miles Kennedy.
Ah, okay. Yes.
Slash in the same position. It's like, and actually, Doyle was kind of in the same position too, with the Misfits, in that, like, when people go see Slash, what they really want to see is Guns N' Roses, you know. If he does something totally different, then people be like, I want Guns N' Roses, you know. But then if he does Miles Kennedy aping Axl, people be like, oh yeah, man, it's kind of like Axl, you know. And Doyle's band had that guy, Alex something, I think his name was Alex Wolfman or whatever that guy's name was, like the singer for Doyle's band. The guy kind of looks like Danzig and kind of sings like Danzig, and be like, yeah, it's kind of like Danzig, you know. So you know, it's a tough position, you know.
Yeah.
Let's see here. I think we got one or two more stories. Kepi Ghoulie has announced a surprise record. It's called Ramones Love Songs or something like that. Kepi also just put out an album via Pirates Press, which is him covering a bunch of bands, including T-Rex and Peter Murphy and Rolling Stones, I think. And honestly, I got to say, even though it's a covers record, it's pretty solid, and it's Kepi with a full band, finally, not an acoustic. The Ramones cover songs album, it's all acoustic, and it's Kepi doing all love songs covering the Ramones. We're going to have Kepi on the podcast pretty soon. I'm excited for it. I thought the Kepi's covers record was pretty cool. Kepi's talked about the Ramones forever. I mean, of course, he's a huge Ramones fan. So it is interesting that he's finally doing an all Ramones covers record. So that's kind of cool. Last story, Emmore tells about Pussy Riot and Putin's ashes.
Yeah. So this is, I thought it was a music video. And like, it's kind of a music video, but it's also like this art installation, yeah, and this beginning of an art thing. So they filmed it. Well, what they did is they made a giant portrait of Vladimir Putin, and they set fire to it kind of in like a desert. So the video that they released is showing that, and showing a bunch of people, like they have tights and like kind of black nighty type things, and of course they're all wearing balaclavas. So they light this on fire, and when they did that, they also performed rituals and cast spells aimed to chase Putin away. So 12 women participated in the performance. In order to join, they were required to experience acute hatred and resentment towards the Russian president, and most of the participants were either Ukrainian, Belarusian, or Russian. So I love it. I love the video because it's so like poetic. It's like, yeah, fuck you, we're going to destroy you kind of thing. And then we're going to bottle your ashes. We're going to put them in an art gallery. And we're going to do this whole installation about how like, well, what if like you didn't exist kind of thing? Like, how would the world be, and how would everyone's lives be better, and kind of stuff like that. So, and the song that accompanies the video, it's very like ethereal and kind of spiritual, like almost. And it fits really well. It's sung in Russian. But yeah, it's really cool. I love seeing what they do, because it's always, there's always a lot more to it than kind of meets the eye. And like, especially with this, there's just so much going on. I think it's a really powerful statement, and it kind of like begs the question, who doesn't have acute acute resentment and hatred towards him?
This is rad as hell, and here's why. Putin's a bad man. He's a jackass. He's a bad man, but yeah. I mean, he's definitely an oppressor. He's definitely a fascist, and he's a real piece of work, this guy. And this is super rad because, like, this literally could get them killed or arrested or whatever in Russia. Like,
or worse.
Like they literally could disappear because of this. So it's so rad that they're standing up. And, Russia's a real piece of work. The Russian government is a real piece of work these days. So I think it's real cool that some of the Russian people – the members of Pussy Riot are Russian, not Ukrainian, right? Or at least like the main ones that we read about. They're Russian, right?
Russian.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this is super rad. This is super talk about. It really is. I mean, this is really putting your money where the mouth, put your money where your mouth is. And this is cool. And I love the whole, I love how Pussy Riot really is combining pure artistic statement with actual political discourse and real world action. And this is rad and cool. And one of the most daring pieces of music released this year. This should be the Rock Hall of Fame memoir. This.
I agree. I agree completely. And one of the like Pussy Riot members, like she smuggled herself out of Russia with like food delivery, like apps and stuff. Like it's amazing. Like what these people have been through.
And are still doing this.
There's a really good book on them where they kind of detail their imprisonment like during the Sochi Olympics and stuff. It's very good.
Do you remember like three or four of them got locked up and then they got released, but then immediately after getting released, they got locked up again? Do you remember?
Yeah.
Are they all out now or are some of them still locked up or because I don't know. I should look it up, but I don't know.
I think the majority of them are out and they've gotten out of Russia. There's one person who was involved in it initially. And I believe after the like the arrests and the time in the heart and like the labor camps and the prisons and stuff, I think she stopped her involvement because it gave her serious health problems.
Yeah, honestly, they're lucky they didn't get whacked. So the fact that, like, I know Nadi is one of the main ones, or at least one of the more ones, maybe not one of the main ones, one of the most visual ones, you know, or one in the front. Is this, she's been locked up and she's still doing this, which is rad as hell, man. So this is cool. Yeah, so, man, this is real cool. Elmore, what track should we send them on out with?
Do you want to do the, we just talked about it, do you want to do the sound from Putin's Ashes?
All right, this is the sound from Putin's Ashes. And we will see you next week when John is hopefully spread less than and finally has his shit together. So we'll see you next week.